Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and beer makes everything better. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
And we're the Drunk Guys.
Today we are discussing The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Junot Diaz.
The book came out about 10 years ago, 2007, mm-hmm. Won the Pulitzer for fiction and the National Book Award, pretty widely lauded.
Big awards.
Widely taught, and especially in college classes. You probably have read it. If not, you should.
All right, here's a quick synopsis. Yeah, spoiler alert. Here's a quick synopsis. So the book tells a story of three generations of the Cabral / De Leon family in the Dominican Republic and then in Paterson, New Jersey. Oscar, the most recent and the title character, is fat, he's a nerd, and he's afraid he's going to be the only Dominican to die a virgin. Throughout the book, we learn the family history in the DR, such as his mother Billy and grandfather Abelard, and their life under the dictator Rafael Trujillo.
So let's start with a beer.
All right.
Nate, you brought this one over.
All right, so this one's not that deep. This is a beer called Fever Dream by the Flying Dog Brewery. There is a lot of Flying Dog. They should sponsor us.
They fucking should.
Yeah. So Fever Dream, this is a beer with mango and habanero. Mango habanero IPA is what it's called.
Of course IPAs. Yeah. Cheers.
Totally.
Oh, man, that's nice. You get the mango, a little bit of heat from the habanero. Not too much.
I mean, there's definitely some spice, for sure. It's definitely in there.
Habanero is one, you know, I feel it on the finish, kind of the roof of your mouth, you get a little tingle. Mm-hmm. Habanero and chilies in general are one of those ingredients that brewers use. Sometimes, you know, they kind of, getting the quantity right is difficult. And usually I see them in stouts. Yeah, I see a lot of chili, like Rogue makes a chipotle porter or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
I see them in bigger beers where they can kind of stand up to it and it cuts through the sweetness. An IPA is interesting, kind of adds to the mango, certainly. As the hops, which often have a citrus or tropical fruit smell or taste, the mango is a really nice addition. It's a really good beer. Sweet. So the narrator tells us, really before anything about Oscar, about Abelard or Belly or any of the other characters, the narrator tells us about this Dominican phenomenon, the fuku.
Right. Which, of course, means fuck you.
Right. I mean, it really looks like fuck you. I imagine it's a real Dominican thing. I can't imagine that Junot Diaz just invented this and made it central to his book. I'm sure it's a real thing. But it does look like fuck you, which is kind of funny. So the fuku is a curse.
It's a curse brought on by colonialism.
Yeah, so that's really...
That's part of it as well. But it's a curse that is supposedly on everybody's family, that happens to everyone. And really the premise of the book, you know, on page one is, this is the best fuku story. Like, this is the most fuku you're going to hear about.
Our narrator, who we find out later, is Junior, who is a friend of Oscar's and friend of Oscar's. Paramore, Oscar's sister, that he tells us the fuku story. So the fuku is a curse. You could bring it on to your family. You can get rid of it, maybe. But the curse of the fuku is brought onto the Cabral / De Leon family by Oscar's grandfather, who is a successful doctor.
It's brought on by Trujillo, the dictator, but he's sort of the first generation with this major fuku.
Right. So Abelard is the one that invites the fuku, I guess, into their life. That he gets that same one because he is, well, Trujillo, should tell you a little bit about him, because I really didn't know too much about him. I had heard the name, but I did not know much about it. I still don't know very much. But Trujillo was a dictator, sort of in the traditional strongman military guy form, from about 1930 to his assassination in 1961. He was the de facto and often de jure leader of the DR. And while he might have helped the DR with their poverty and their post-colonial sort of economy, he was notorious for a bunch of human rights violations, ranging from attempted genocide against Haitians and also
terrible political repression,
murdering people, like any dissidents or murder, like that they're mentioned in the book, that the Mirabel sisters, who were beaten to death in a field, brutal violence against people who spoke out. And he also was notorious for raping thousands and thousands of young women throughout the country, sort of, you know, I want to fuck your daughter scenario. Okay, Trujillo, Il Jefe, right, is his nickname?
Yeah.
You can go fuck my daughter now, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So he is a horrendous human being, not as popular in the education system here, which Diaz does mention, but you don't really learn about the DR, probably just because he lived in the golden age of the tyrants, and he can't really keep up with Adolf and Mussolini and Stalin and Mao and also his actions had much shorter ramifications in terms of just geography that really fucked up the island of Hispaniola, but does not affect the world as much as the other dictators, which is, you know, which I guess is good that he didn't affect the whole world, but it's unfortunate we don't really learn about him too much because he's very interesting.
In case you didn't already hate Trujillo enough, here's how he was so another way he was so fucked up. So he himself had really dark skin, but he got it lightened. Yet at the same time, after he lightened his own skin, he was basically rounding up a genocide against anyone on the island who was Haitian, who had darker skin than him, in addition to all those other fucked up things.
Right, and unlike the other famous people who have lightened their skin, he did not produce Thriller or any other great works of pop music, nor did he moonwalk, to my knowledge. So that makes him kind of shitty.
Did he free Willie?
You know, he freed his Willie into a whole lot of young women.
Different kind.
Not as nice.
For sure. So that's the premise of the book, the Fuku, this curse on the whole island and on the family specifically.
Right, so the Fuku affects them in different ways, and that's, you know, first thing to talk about. There's three generations of this family. There's the grandfather, who is a doctor and is middle-aged and successful and not complicit with Trujillo, but has no issues with Trujillo, does not stand up against him until Trujillo comes for his daughter. Jacqueline, whatever, comes for the daughter. Then the next generation is his third daughter, the youngest daughter, Belicia, or Belly, as she's called, who will grow up, spoiler for, you know, Abelard, an orphan, raised by this other person who's sort of like a mother aunt character. And then Oscar's sister refers to this woman as abuela, right? As grandmother. So she's adopts Belly and raises her, and that they're poor and she works in a bakery and they have their life. Then we get to the third generation of Oscar and to a lesser degree, his sister Lola, who were both born in the Dominican Republic, but are transplanted to Jersey.
Paterson, New Jersey.
Yes, the Valhalla of Dominicans. But they go to Paterson, New Jersey, and they are raised there. And then they kind of go back and forth, actually, in their lives. They revisit the whole land.
Yeah, you only find out about all those things as the book goes on. It starts with Oscar, the youngest generation, and it's only through the telling of the story it goes back to the other generations. It almost goes in reverse order.
Yeah, because we get Oscar, then we go, then actually goes to like Oscar's sister for a while, Lola. I believe. Then it goes to Oscar's mom. Back to Oscar. Then it goes to Abelard, which is now like 1950s, 1952 or something like that. Then it goes back to Oscar. And as the Oscar story progresses, each time we see Oscar, it's going further in time, but the little digressions take us further back in time, which is an interesting choice for a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Also interesting is that the narration is by a character in the story, Junior, for the majority of the book, except there is the one section of Oscar's sister, Lola, who narrates her own section, which is kind of interesting. That's the Fuku. I mean, I think that's about as much history as we could even pretend we know about.
I mean, there's a lot in there, but we're going to move on to the next
thing. Yeah, we should tell you about Oscar. So, as Nate said in the introduction, Oscar is a fat, nerdy kid who is socially inept. He's growing up in the 80s. He's obsessed with comic books and science fiction novels and fantasy novels and Dungeons and Dragons. And he's a super nerd and he's fat and, you know, does not take, he has like a, call his Dominican fro, and he has like a dirt lip. He's striking out with the ladies left and right, and he doesn't even know how to talk to girls.
No.
He, you know, professes his love to them in ways that a middle school or high school student is just not prepared to entertain. And he gets no action at all from the ladies, which is a huge problem for him in their community because
he's Dominican.
Yeah, and that's how the other male characters act. They are constantly talking about girls, talking to girls, and most importantly for what Oscar doesn't get to do, fucking those girls. So he is totally left out of their world and transplants himself into the fake world of the sci-fi fantasy realm.
Yeah. He is more committed to science fiction and fantasy. I mean, he's becoming a writer. Like, he not only is obsessed with all these books and all these comic books and all these things, but, you know, when we see him in college, they never once mention him going to class. It's all about watching anime, rereading the Lord of the Rings for the millionth time, and then writing. He's like written multiple books of the sci-fi fantasy things. He's going to be the Dominican Tolkien, as he says. And he is so committed to that. He is more committed to his nerdiness than anyone in the universe. He even speaks when he has conversations with people, and he doesn't actually speak that much in the book, but when he does, he says hilarious things that sounds like it comes right out of a comic book, right out of a fantasy story.
You know, it kind of reminded me of the main character in Confederacy of Dunces, and just the weird hyper-academic way he speaks, but totally socially incapable. Which, just to get ahead of it, I'm going to open our second beer now.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is also from Flying Dog.
Sponsor us.
Please, we work for beer. Which is, I'm pulling a Nate here. It is called Tropical Bitch, which, you know what, I'm just going to say right away, Oscar's not a bitch. We're not even going to go there.
No, it's not one of our questions this time.
It's not. I mean, it's a question for every other book it seems. So Tropical Bitch is a Belgian IPA, which if you recall, when we did Catcher in the Rye, we drank Raging Bitch by them, which is also a Belgian IPA. But I think this is the same beer or similar beer where they've added tangerine and mango. But you certainly smell it.
Yeah.
Well, that is nice. I like this a whole lot more than I like the Raging Bitch.
Yeah, this is really good.
That's nice. That mango really adds up. Tangerine and mango. Tangerine, subtle in there, but it helps balance out those Belgian kind of flavors. And I'm not usually a fan of that spicy clove kind of stuff in there. That's really nice. So he's not a bitch, but, you know, some other characters possibly.
Right.
So he is a super nerd and...
Throughout the book. So here's the thing. When I first read the book, I thought the narrator was Oscar, just telling his story about what happened before, but that's actually not what it is. It's a different character. Throughout the book, the narrator is making all these sci-fi references and these fantasy references. And in the chapters about the DR, especially with Belly's chapters, he's saying that the DR is Mordor and that his lieutenants are the Ringwraiths, and making some very, very interesting references, which were awesome.
Yeah, there's tons of very overt references and lots of things hidden in that. Almost as a nerd shibboleth, you read them and you're like, I know what Ray Bradbury short story you just referenced there, even though you never said the name or the title, you just kind of mentioned it in the sentence. I feel super nerd empowered and sad. But it's peppered throughout it. Well, I shouldn't say peppered. It's seamlessly interwoven. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is the character Junior curses and uses slang at the same time. Right? There's tons of cursing, tons of use of the familial N-bomb. Right? There's an interesting effect of the Spanglish that he speaks at points, the street quote-unquote language that he uses, and then the high fantasy nerd references. He makes him a very interesting narrator.
It's very cool. You know, and I feel really smart for the things that I recognize, and then there are a whole... I mean, I'm definitely a nerd, and I didn't even recognize a whole bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if I were to go... You can go through it very carefully, and maybe there's, if someone wants to write their dissertation or something on the hermeneutics of high fantasy references and Oscar, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, a critical study. You could write a whole lot about them. They're really woven in. And it never really feels forced.
No.
Maybe it's just because that's how the character speaks the entire time.
Yeah.
That you just accept it. But it never feels forced. You know, sometimes people are overly clever in their writing. And I think about that movie Juno, where the characters say all these clever things constantly. And it's like, nobody fucking talks like that ever. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, ever. Nobody talks like that consistently. Now, I know in movies and books, that kind of punch up our dialogue and make us sound smarter and cleverer than we are, at least not consistently. But this somehow works. Maybe it's because he combines the highbrow and the lowbrow. And Junior is not pretentious about it. Because Junior's always talking about how Oscar is essentially pretentious, right? Using these fancy words he just taught himself. And he describes the girl as, she's orchidaceous. He says these things that don't quite work. So that's Oscar. And as we said earlier, he strikes out with the girls, but he's in love with them constantly. He is head over heels in love with a girl he meets the moment he speaks to her, or she even just glances and he catches her eye. So he's trying... Super hard.
Love and lust are two, like, which are kind of the same thing. Love and lust, that's one of the main, really the main theme of the book, or definitely one of the main things. Every single character is obsessed with love and who they love. So he loves the girls so much and he will, like, never talk to them. He can't, but he's just so obsessed with them all the time. His mother, when we go back to her chapters, she wants, you know, the most popular boy at school so much. After that, she, you know, gets in with the gangster. You know, that's him. And then the main character is always talking about all the girls he's fucking all the time. And then Trujillo himself, who, you know, was obsessed with having sex with every woman on the island. And really the original Fuku came from the grandfather trying to hide his daughter from Trujillo. It's almost like that act right there is what brought the Fuku on the entire family.
I think it's exactly what brought the Fuku on
the family. And not only that, because when he did that, so the father gets sent to prison and beaten and tortured and basically, I mean, he survives in prison for 14 years, but he basically dies. The older sister kills herself. The mother dies. The other sister dies. And then that leaves Belicia to be an orphan. Never even meets her. Toddlers. Never meets her family. And that was the original Fuku.
And that's just where it starts.
Yeah, right. And that's just where it starts.
Belicia's life is the worst of the three.
It's just every character, which brings us to our next beer.
Yeah.
Definitely brings us to our next beer. This is from Dogfish Head. This is called Romantic Chemistry. Romantic Chemistry IPA.
This is our third IPA, and again, another different type of IPA. It's got mangoes and apricots and ginger, and then the dry hop, so it should be pretty goddamn hoppy. Poured into an official Dogfish Head glass if you're looking for someone to sponsor. Well, that smells wonderful.
I bought a 6-pack and sampled these ahead of time, so I already know what it's going to be, but it's good.
Nice. I smell more than I taste all those things that they've added. You know, the ginger and mango and apricot.
I taste apricot the most. That's, for me, that's the strongest flavor that comes out.
Maybe that's just, I'm just used to that already kind of being a flavor in IPAs. Even if they don't actually put apricot, you get that fruit smell and flavor. That's nice. It's kind of gritty smell. It's very nice. I love Dogfish Head stuff, so I would probably be predisposed to like it. Speaking of romantic chemistry, like that is one of the, it leads us to one of the main other sort of conflicts within the book, is the idea of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And as the drunk guys, we are, of course, the perfect ones to discuss this.
Totally masculine. All the time.
Oh, yeah. I just spend my days building engines surrounded by titty magazines. So,
you know, I benched 350 before I came over here.
Which is better than... Junior actually tells us that he could bench 340 at some point in the book.
Yeah, I could take him anytime.
Yeah, 340. Yeah. So, so we have the two main male characters of the modern narrative, at least really the whole book. Oscar and Junior are such polar opposites. Now, they're both Dominican men, Dominican-American men. Junior is athletic and works out, and is cool, right? He, like, speaks slang, right? He calls, you know, says slang things. Like, you can tell that he is supposed to be the cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
He always has a girlfriend or two or three, plus some side bitches, plus girls
all
he just picks
time.
Up at the club. Like, he is a horn dog, constantly fucking other girls, has no respect for women in, like, a relationship form. It's just about getting some fresh cash whenever he can. Whereas, on the other hand, Oscar is super reverent of women, yet he can't talk to them. He's overweight. He is into things that are not cool. Being into anime and sci-fi isn't the coolest thing now, but in, like, 1984...
Yeah, because this is
cool.
The late 80s, and when he starts college, it's, like, 1990.
Yeah, so he's super uncool.
But Oscar wants real romance. Instead of he's looking for sex, although he does want that too, he's really looking for, like, the romantic love, because he's read all these high fantasy kinds of things, and that's his most important thing.
So, you know, one of the things in the book, aside from Oscar, pretty much every male character is pretty shitty. Junior is okay, but he's a sleaze. But all the other male characters, also Abelard's not bad. Pujols, the gangster, Trujillo himself, Oscar's father, who we don't really meet much.
Yeah.
The guy that Lola runs off with for a little while. Like, most of the main, the goth girl's boyfriend. Most of the male characters are dicks to the women in their lives. Some of them are downright abusive physically or emotionally or verbally. Oscar is the complete opposite of that.
Junior and Oscar are almost complete opposites of each other. They're very, they're the two opposite sides of the spectrum of manhood. But yet, at the end of the book, we find out that Junior is actually the narrator of the book. And we find out, it's not clear before that, but
so
close to the end.
Halfway through, you find out.
We find out that he's the narrator, but yet as the narrator, he is talking about all these science fiction and fantasy references. He's the one, it's almost like he as a character is putting in all these things.
He must be, because Oscar's dead. Right?
Yeah,
his
Oscar's dead.
It's over.
You know, I first thought Oscar was the narrator, but that's not it. He's not the narrator. It's Junior. So throughout the book, you really find out that Oscar was, like, true to himself the whole time, and then Junior had to basically become more like Oscar.
There's a point where Junior, in an attempt to be helpful and tries to be kind to Oscar, because they end up being roommates, and it's initially out of just easiness.
Yeah, it's Junior. Convenient.
It is very convenient. He gets a shitty, draws low in the lottery for the room,
lottery. Yeah.
So he has this room with Oscar, and he tries to help Oscar out. He tries to help him lose weight because Junior's a gym rat, and he takes Oscar running with him. He tries to tell him how to talk to girls better. He tries to tell him how to not be such a fucking herb. But Oscar eventually just gives up. Now, maybe this is the closest Oscar comes to being a bitch, is that you can do a couple push-ups, man. He's really refuses to change even small things about himself. But every one of Junior's attempts to change Oscar fails. Yet, without really trying, by the end of the book, Junior is a different person.
Yeah.
Or really, by the end of the narrative story, at the start of the book, he's already this person. But by the end of the story, Junior has changed, because Junior's the one referencing Ray Bradbury. Junior's the one calling them ring wraiths. Junior is the one who knows these things inside and out and talks about Galactus and shit like that.
Yeah. And Junior's the one who becomes a writing teacher at a college and settles down with one woman and always regrets not getting together with Lola, and becomes not entirely Oscar, because that's definitely not true, but becomes a lot more like Oscar than Oscar ever became like anybody else. Him.
Yeah, so Oscar really had this effect on him without trying, which is interesting, right? Because you'd think Junior's such a strong personality, right? he's such an outgoing and charismatic guy, and he thinks what he does is that's the only way it is in his world, because he kind of represents the negative aspects of the hyper-masculine world that they come from. But he's also sympathetic, so hey, that's Oscar wheels now.
And then Oscar, the uber nerd, he's the one that changes the world, not Junior.
Right. Well, he changes their family's world, at least, right? It's interesting that Junior's not even a family member, and he's the narrator of the story. That does beg the question, like, how does... Junior does hint at certain things, right? Junior was kind of a writer when he met Oscar, right? There are references when they're roommates to Junior showing Oscar his short stories, and Oscar being really helpful and giving him tons of notes and trying to help him become a better... help him improve his writing, probably just because Oscar glad to have a friend. Realistically, I mean, his friends, there's a part earlier in the book where Oscar's high school friends, his middle school friends, his long-term friends, kind of betray him in Oscar's mind, right? When they get girlfriends and they are not hanging out with him. And he says, do they have a friend?
And they say, no, no one will go out with you.
Well, they don't say that, but they look at each other and they're like, no, they don't have any friends.
Yeah.
And Oscar knows exactly what just happened, right? Mm-hmm. That they sold him out for a piece of tail, which happens every day in America. And he is crushed by this because... For him, especially from reading things like Lord of the Rings, loyalty and justice and doing the right thing and standing up against evil, that's what's important. Whereas they are selling out their friend for a blowjob, which can't blame them. Oscar's not blowing them. So that's what they do. So he's crushed by this. So I think when he has Junior be his friend... that helps him. Though, Junior's not always the best friend to him. If you think about, like, there's other things that are referenced along the way. Now, Junior's telling the story, right? So if you want to parse his character, you have to read between the lines a little. I think immediately of when he says, Oscar was such a great roommate. If I ever came in and him and his friends were in the dorm playing Dungeons and Dragons, he would just quietly move to the cafeteria. Well, wait a second. That's not being a good fucking roommate or friend.
No.
It's like, I don't want to see your friends, because if Junior came by with his friends... Or if the situation were reversed, and Oscar came in and Junior and his friends are there doing whatever they like to do to hang out, they wouldn't have necessarily just left. That's fucked up. Junior's kind of a prick to Oscar, at least in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Junior, like, tries to help Oscar, help him get him in shape and help him try to tell him how you talk to girls, but he doesn't try that hard. Or more like, the first time it gets kind of frustrating, he just gives up.
Well, Oscar,
and then Lola calls him, like, what happened? And then Oscar tries to kill himself, fails at it, and then only breaks both his legs, jumping off a highway overpass.
Yeah.
He only breaks his legs because instead of landing on concrete, he just landed on soft soil. And then he has to, like, recover.
I mean, Oscar's
pissed. So Junior doesn't try that hard.
I think he did try. Well, at least he made it sound like it, right? He tried,
but he didn't try.
He tries for one day.
Yeah.
Come on, we're going to go running. And then Oscar's like, no, I refuse. I refuse to run. And then, all right, come on. No, seriously, we're going. No, I won't. All right, that's the end of that. So, yeah, he doesn't try that hard. But you know what? It's like the whole lead a horse to water thing. Like, how can...
It's true.
If Oscar, the 300-pound kid, doesn't want to go for the jog, then there's not much he can do about that.
Yeah.
Oscar didn't want to change who he was. Oscar was... Now, you could pitch that positively. Oscar is true to himself. But Oscar...
Could lose a few pounds.
Yeah.
That would be okay.
He could have. He could have
and
tried.
He did by the end.
That's true, he did.
But he had to get beaten almost to death and then lose most of it in the hospital.
You know what? I bet that's like a sort of dieting service people might pay for. Just the iron lung diet. You just get put in the hospital
like
for 6 months.
When CrossFit just gets... too old and nobody wants it anymore. No, just get beaten by Dominican police.
I think, you know what you could do? You could have a different type of CrossFit where you have Roman guards beat the shit out of you and you pretend you're Jesus. And then...
Ooh.
CrossFit? Too soon? spoiler. I don't want to tell you what happens to that guy. Sorry, don't worry about that. That's different book.
CrossFit. That's terrible.
That is awful. It's awful. People pray to that. So... So Junior is totally affected by Oscar, and maybe it's through this, like, osmosis, partially, right? Because he also mentions coming into the dorm or whatever they have, and Oscar's watching Akira, which is a 1980s anime movie, which I've actually seen a couple times. And
I have not.
It's pretty badass. And Junior's always, like, Oscar's always immediately offering to turn it off. Or says, it's almost over. And Junior's like, no, that's cool, I'll watch it. Because he kind of liked it. And he admits he liked it. But he would never say that to Oscar. He would never say, let's watch it together next time. Or how about we, you know, that's too generous for him. But he will try to watch it, though he always falls asleep, is what happens to Junior. So through some sort of osmosis, the nerdiness gets into Junior. And I think probably after Oscar's death, Junior must have felt something about Oscar and tried to copy part of his life and got into the same shit he did, because Junior just knows all the sci-fi writers. How? He had to read them. He had to read Burroughs and Lovecraft and all these other
books. Well, maybe Junior was always like that and always into that kind of thing, but just pretending he wasn't.
Well, that makes him a far less sympathetic character in my mind. As a nerd, like, fuck you, man. Own that shit. Don't be a closet nerd. But why not? Why Junior at all? He's a character. Now, I understand. I've never actually read any of Diaz's other books. He has two other books that are collections of short stories. I think Junior is a recurring character in some of those stories. And from what I've gathered online,
it's the alter ego of Juno Diaz.
Yeah, which is interesting because actually Oscar Wilde sounds more like the alter ego of Juno. Juno Diaz isn't a fat guy. He's very fit looking, but he's into sci-fi and into that sort of nerd stuff. And he was born in the DR and came to New Jersey as a young child. Like the autobiographical elements of Oscar Wilde are pretty clear, but he identifies more with Junior, maybe just because they're both alive. that tends to help. Why Junior? Why Junior the narrator? Why not just a third person narrator? My theory is that, one, it gets to make it a lot hipper.
It does. It was like, it's a really hip book.
Yeah, it's got this snappy writing where he's saying things like, man, motherfucker did this, he was like Galadriel doing that shit, something like half gangster, half nerd. Very entertaining for me to read as a person who is one of those two things. So that was cool. It would definitely have been different if it were just, and then Oscar decided to reread Lord of the Rings, period. It would have been a little more clinical and less personal. But why have Junior do it? Or maybe, why just Junior, right? Lola gets her own chapter. So Lola is Oscar's sister, and at a certain point in the narrative, she runs away from home because she fights nonstop with her mother. And the mother is, I mean, it's pretty dark, actually. I don't want to say rereading it because I listened to the audiobook the second time through, but I listened to it, and that section was, as a person who's not 17 years old anymore, as a 30-year-old, when I listened to that, I'm like, man, that's some fucking cold shit, she said to her mother. So the mother finds out she has cancer, and she had breast cancer, and she had a mastectomy or whatever, and later on, the cancer has returned, and then the daughter just says, I hope you die from it this time.
Yeah.
That's fucked up to say, especially knowing that we know, as the reader, what an awful life that woman had to get to that point, to make sure, like, I mean, we could tell Belicia's story, which is really dark.
Yeah.
So she grows up, she's the second generation of the clan, and the Fuku hits her, I think, hardest of all.
Yeah.
Because she lives as far as the end of the book, right? I don't know if she dies at the end of the book.
She's not dead at the end of the book.
But, you know, her life is pretty shitty.
Her family is dead, you know, because her father, Abelard, and all and both of her sisters and her mother are dead, and she is either like sold off or just given to a family in the poorest part of the DR, and it's in that, you know, they don't care at all, and that after something happens, and then her father, this is the
adoptive one,
the adoptive father, pours boiling oil on her back, and so for she has this, it's only referenced, I mean, it's referenced a couple of times, but even right in the very beginning when you first meet her, she has a terrible scar on her back. It only happened to be that her father's sister, her father's cousin or something, decided to go look for her, thought she was dead, adopts her after she's like been horribly, horribly scarred and has not gone to school, and has none of these things happened. So she is like a really, really terrible situation, but then is working in a bakery, but she gets a scholarship to like the best school, like middle school? Well, how old is she at that point? She must be like 13, 14, 12, 13, 14.
Based on what happens at that middle school, I hope she's
13, yeah, 14, middle school, at least. Middle school in the country. And then she's like, nobody likes her. And then her academic skills are really bad.
What doesn't help is that she's black.
Yeah, and she's really dark colored. She's very dark skinned, which is a bad sign when you're from TR, I guess. Under Trujillo.
I think though, in a lot of Latin American countries, there are sort of hierarchy of skin color because of just you could say this is about colonialism, but the fact that people who look more European
or higher status.
Higher status. So,
yeah.
Like that, you see it very clearly with Pujols, the boy that she has the big crush on.
Yeah.
He is 100% of European ancestry.
Yeah, he's German.
He boasts about it, yeah. Which is interesting. I thought all the Germans fled to Argentina and he got there. So she goes to the private school. She is unpopular. She's only friends with the Asian girl who nobody wants to talk to just because of their even more overt racism against the Asians, the Chinese girl. And she then, puberty hits her.
Hard.
In a way that makes your loins tangle. Because Diaz is obsessed with sex throughout this book. He's constantly talking about the size of people's dicks and how big Alicia's tits are.
Yeah.
That she's got, like, triple F tits that are popping out the top of her shirt all the time. She can't sleep on her back without being suffocated. And she's this traffic-stopping beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets the attention, as you would imagine, of the entitled prick kid, the Draco Malfoy of the book, Pujols, who has a giant cock and is fucking her in broom closets at the school. And then the school finds out. The boy gets in trouble. Not really for much of anything other than the fact that he was fucking a black girl. You know, that's the real problem. He gets into military school. And she gets kicked out of school.
Yeah.
So that's like the first thing that's shitty now. I don't want to say she was used by the boy because she sought him out.
Yeah.
But not treated with a risk. Like he, you know, the instant that it turns that he's looking out for himself, fuck her. Well, he did before.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
Yeah. Figuratively instead of literally. Yeah. And then she leaves school because she just doesn't want to be there anymore.
She's kicked out.
She's kicked out. She doesn't want to be there. She becomes a waitress and apparently is good at it.
She's a waitress working only for tips. Like she's back to being poor.
She's back to being poor. And then she meets the gangster. And does he have a name?
I think he's just the gangster.
He
has a name. It's mentioned briefly. He's really just a gangster.
So because she's so beautiful and she's 15 at this point, 16 at this point, very young, you know, she ends up being the main girlfriend of, not wife, because we find out that later, main girlfriend of this gangster who has like terrible story and all this, done all these terrible things. And runs all these brothels all over DR and Cuba and all these things. But anyway, she becomes his main girlfriend. She gets pregnant, and then his wife finds out. Now his wife is Trujillo's sister, so Belly gets arrested, gets thrown in prison and beaten horribly.
Well, before that, the sister offers her like the nicer deal. She says, "These men," she has a couple of goons.
Hmm.
Are going to take you to a doctor.
Right, yeah.
Who's going to get rid of that baby. You're going to have an abortion. And then I'm never going to see you. And, like, you're going to just go back to being a poor... Which, compared to what later happens, seems almost charitable. Because they then take her... She escapes somehow. She, like, runs away. She, like, distracts them.
After being absolutely beaten so terribly.
Well, no. They take her out to the sugarcane field and beat the shit out of her in this scene that... They don't even show the scene. Like Junior is narrating it.
It's just referred to.
He says, "Let me just tell you like the damage." And he also even says it in sort of like nerdy ways, like 160 hit points of damage or whatever. Her leg is shattered, her arm is broken, then it never is the same. She has her ribs, 5 ribs broken, her lung collapsed. Of course she loses that baby.
Yeah.
Her teeth are knocked out, her head, and then, you know, just to run on icing on the cake, which is really dark. He says, "And was there time for a rape or two in there?" We don't know. She never really talked about it. So she has this thing where she's left for dead in the cane fields, which they say in the book, sugar cane fields are very difficult to navigate your way out of, especially at night when you've been beaten within an inch of your life. So they really expect her to die there, but she's visited by was it her father? Somebody visits her and speaks to her and is like, no, you're going to have 2 other children and you need to go for them.
So she walks through the cane field and like finds a road and she's picked up by musicians.
The wedding band.
The wedding band, that bring her to a hospital and then she survives, but just barely.
And she has to, and the mother or her adoptive mother, Lainka, says, you know, you can't stay here anymore.
Yep.
You have to go to Nueva York. You have to leave.
Yeah.
This because they will find you sooner or later. They will know you're alive, and then they will murder you. Then and implicitly they'll murder the person who harbored her. They'll it's not going to end well if you stay here. If you just leave now, that's your chance. You have to just make a clean break for it.
And we said more about her than we said about Oscar so far because she has almost as much of the book as Oscar does.
She does.
Who is the main character of this book?
Good question. The title would lead you to believe it's Oscar Wilde. And he gets probably about a half the screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Then next you're going to have Alicia.
He gets the beginning and the end.
Yeah, and throughout. And he probably has three, I mean, I haven't counted how many pages
three
he gets.
Good sections.
But three good sections. And there's like these intermissions of his mother, his sister, and his grandfather. So Oscar still probably is the main character in terms of attention. But I don't think it's about Oscar Wilde 100%. You know, what do you think? What do you think it is then?
You actually see less of Oscar himself. Because when you see Oscar, you're actually seeing it from Junior's perspective. You see less of him, and he has the fewest like words, the fewest lines. If this was to be adapted into a movie, he would have the fewest lines of anybody. Sure. He would almost, except for, I mean, he has crazy things happen to him, but he is the most passive character. Like everything happens to him, rather than except for the end, he doesn't initiate almost anything.
Right. You know, we never even talked about the end. We should probably.
So, okay, the very end. So Oscar is obsessed with sci-fi, obsessed with fantasy, and obsessed that he loves girls so much, but he'll be the only Dominican to die a virgin. Well, he goes back to DR. You know, he's finished college. He's been a teacher for a couple years back in Paterson, New Jersey. And he goes back to DR, and he meets a middle-aged whore, a middle-aged prostitute, who he falls in love with. You know, his first...
he does with every woman.
Yeah, every single woman. But he falls in love with this prostitute, and he does not... He just pursues her. He does not let her go. And then after a little while, he finds out, well, her other boyfriend is chief of police, or...
Capitan or something like that.
Yeah, captain in the police department, which means that he's going to be incredibly possessive in all those things. But he does not give up. They send him to... Find him. They beat him within an inch of his life in the cane field, just like his mother. He goes back to America, recovers, and then goes back to DR to find her, because that's what he wants. He's being true to himself this whole time.
Right, but he's, you know, it's quixotic. That is the word.
Oh, for sure.
You know, he's going after the late 30s, kind of beat up hooker. No, I'm not. Whatever you want to say. She's like a paunch. She's got crow's feet. She's kind of old and leathery looking. She's not. He sees something in her that nobody else sees. I think he half imagines these things in these female characters. He wants to be the. I think it's because he wants to be the savior, and he sees her with the dick boyfriend, just like every other fucking man you would think in the Dominican Republic is like this from reading the book. Every man is a possessive, abusive piece of shit since they killed Abelard. So. Mm-hmm. And that guy, of course, is not going to give up. Which is also just interesting that how is the chief of police, he has a problem with Oscar going after his girlfriend, but he has no problem with his girlfriend being a prostitute. That is a strange thing.
They'd never explain that.
I mean, then again, the chief of police guy is not necessarily known for being rational.
Mm-hmm.
So Oscar returns, and this time he is not spared.
He's beaten and killed.
And they do it in a, you know, of course, since the book is rather hip, clever, the guy says something clever, right? He says, hey, what's the English word for fuego? And then Oscar says, fire, and they shoot him, right? And this sort of, you know, firing squad kind of thing that happens. And it's depressing, it's awful. And Oscar is smart, you know, he's the nerd, but he's not just like a nerd in the I'm into weird esoteric crap nerd. He's smart, he's educated, he reads voluminously and has a great vocabulary that he understands, and he thinks he's standing up for the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And after he's dead, Junior gets a letter, or Lola gets a letter, one of them, gets a letter that says, where he says he finally got laid.
Right.
Finally.
The hooker took some pity on him and gave him a freebie. Now, he could have spared himself some trouble and just paid her for her time.
But he wouldn't do that, because he's the knight in shining armor.
Right, well, it didn't work out for him. So is he the main character of the book? No. I'm going to say the main character is not even a person in the book. I think the main character of this book is the fuku on his family.
The fuku itself.
The fuku itself, because that's what it's really about. Now, we've seen some of the things where, like, Diaz has said, it's really about a family trying to find love. Sure, he wrote the book. Maybe he knows better than me. But I thought the book was about the fuku. It was about the curse. As it visits each member of the family, does its damage to them. It starts with the grandfather. He invites the fuku in by defying Trujillo. He then pays for it, that the fuku travels to his daughter, who has it worse than he did, and then she flees, but the fuku does not know geographic limits, and follows them to New Jersey, mm-hmm. where it visits Oscar, and his life is one of isolation and sadness for the most part.
Depression.
And, yeah, depression and just feeling a failure. Anyway, he's not successful at anything he tries to do.
No. When he goes back to Patterson and becomes a teacher, he gets bullied by the other students.
I think he was a substitute teacher too. So he's like,
yeah.
Not that, you know, being a substitute teacher is a non-noble cause, but like, it's like he's not even a teacher. Like he can never quite get to the thing he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
He is iced, is just treated like shit. And so he then dies. Like, so the Fuku hits him hard, but I think the other term, and there's lots of Spanish I learned from reading this book, because Diaz uses Spanish throughout, or Junior yeah. especially, without translating it for you. It's not even italicized. It's just written in there, so it's this sort of Spanglish effect, where you have sentences in English, sentence in Spanish, sometimes it's a word, sometimes it's a whole phrase or sentence, and there's no, you have to just figure it out. 99% of it, I think you could figure out some context, or if you know some cognates.
Hmm.
The other word that's introduced right in the beginning with the Fuku, which is the curse, is the Zafa, the way to cancel out the curse.
Yeah.
Now, Junior gives the example of crossing your fingers really hard and like throwing salt over your shoulder or whatever it is. I think Oscar, the reason why his life is brief, that's not deniable, the reason why his life is wondrous is because he is the Zafa for his family. He cancels out the curse. He ends it.
But does he end it?
Lola lives.
Yeah, that's true.
And Lola has a decent existence.
Lola lives. Junior, who is not technically his family, but is like kind of family, he, you know, he lives and becomes successful and gets much of the life that Oscar actually wanted. So maybe that is the Zafa.
Maybe by doing this, and I think it really nicely marries the sci-fi fantasy stuff that Oscar loved so much, of the heroic sacrifice, like doing the right thing, right? Like, taking the fucking ring to Mordor or whatever,
mm-hmm.
he sacrifices himself to end the curse. I think that's how I view it. I think it ties it up nicely. And I think if you titled your story "The Fuku of the Cabrals," like no one would read that. The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar has a much better title, but I don't think it's really just about Oscar Wilde. I think he's just the final chapter of that story. And we're just drunk enough to believe that at the very least.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to leave it there. So join us next week when we're going to read
The Road
by Cormac McCarthy, not Jack Kerouac. You'll be disappointed.
Yeah. The Road by Cormac McCarthy. Let us know what you thought at drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com or
follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc as in book club. And we hope you do from there.
If you liked our podcast, please rate us and subscribe. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.